Blog Talk Radio.
Pen, I'm Coach Pen.
Hello, and welcome to Third and Long with Coach Pen. It's been a while. I'd like to welcome you all back to my show. My season with the California Quake is officially over, and what a long season it was. I'll get more into that later, but our last game was this past Saturday. We are the only team to have finished our season completely. There are three teams that called it quits due to injuries and various reasons: the Louisiana Fuel, Shreveport, Aftershock, and the New Mexico Menace. The New Mexico Menace is the only one I'm aware of the exact reasons, and I'm glad those teams gave it their all. Fortunately, they were unable to finish the season, but hey, they got to play some football this year, and no teams lost any games because of them folding in the middle of the season. The league was very good about making up those games, reorganizing some schedules. Back onto us, we were supposed to play New Mexico the last week of the season. You know, we didn't end up traveling there because of them running out of players due to injuries, and we ended up playing our local rival, the SoCal Breakers, which was great because both teams were pretty upset that we weren't on the schedule to play each other this year. We're two local teams, maybe 30 minutes separate us. We practiced all preseason together to share costs of the field and to gain some experience, and to not have to play each other during the year was kind of disheartening, especially since last year's two games were very close, with it being 5-0 and 27-0 in favor of the Quake. And that 27-0 score was a little bit misleading, as it was 7-0 at halftime. So we were very happy to have that game put on the schedule. And for those of you who didn't check the league and see that there was an overtime game last week, that was us. We actually went into triple overtime against the Breakers. It's funny because it's been such a long season for me, and that we've had so many just freak injuries, and, you know, with the new squad, which I've explained before, but, you know, we had basically a brand new team this year. There were three players back from the previous years playing in the same exact position they played the year previous. And so everybody that did come back was playing either a brand new position or we had rookies. And we had almost 50 people on our roster at the beginning of the year. I think our last game we had suited up 32 people. So, I mean, we lost a bunch of people, but most of those were due to injury. We had four broken ankles. I mean, one girl tripped over a ball and broke her ankle. So, and that was our starting kicker. So that sucked. Our starting wide receiver broke her ankle the first day of tackling. She was gone for the year. Hyper, one of our strong safety / rover linebacker position, she broke her ankle the second play of the second half in the first game of the year. So that was kind of rough, you know, to lose these players like that. But as the year wore on, you know, every team's going to lose people about through attrition and everything like that. And sometimes, just for life, we had a couple of people, just their jobs became overwhelming. And you have, you know, people getting promotions, stuff like that. So we lost a handful of people for various reasons, and every team does. And it's all about who's going to step up and fill in. And we had a very good team this year where we had people step up and fill in. A couple of people had to end up playing both sides of the ball. But it was an effective yet fun season because we built from the ground up, and that was unique for me. I haven't done that in 8 years since I was the first year with the Long Beach Aftershock, and that really wasn't a new team. That was just a bunch of people who decided to create their own team after being unhappy with the team they were on. But this year was fun to build a team from the ground up, and 4-4 was our final record. We didn't win any Tier 1 games. We went undefeated against Tier 2, so we won all the games we were supposed to win, and struggled the first two games against Tier 1 competition in the Amazons and the Sirens, but they were very experienced, a well-rounded team that we, you know, gave some difficulties the second time we played them. So I was proud of their effort there. Next year I'm looking for so much more out of the ladies when they come back and, you know, have a grasp for how the system works and the playbooks that we run. And right now this is the last week of the season for the IWFL. I'll get into the WFA later. I have printed up a bunch of stuff and researched a ton of information for them. They have 3 weeks left. But I want to go on a little rant real quick. The stats. I'm seeing a lot of teams still not doing the stats. And it's frustrating because I'm one of the teams that do finish the stats and keep them updated, and I like the fact that the league actually has stat leaders now. But the Montreal Blitz, Detroit Demolition, Miami Fury, Jersey Justice, Atlanta Explosion, these are all playoff-caliber teams that do not do stats, and that's unacceptable. I know if I was in somewhat control of anything, if you don't do your stats, you don't get fined. You just don't get to go to the playoffs. Because you should be supplying the fans and the sponsors with what your team is doing and what your team is capable of. The other teams, the Hurricanes, Menace, Monsoon, Nighthawks, Nightmare, Shockwave, Vipers, and Vixen, they really have no shot at the playoffs, and they're not doing their stats. There's still shame on them because, I mean, stats are not that hard. I mean, I don't like the program as much as anybody else, but it's still, I do it. Spend an hour or two of my time. The league would prefer that everybody does the stats during the game, but like, who has those types of volunteers? And if you do, then you really have no excuse. I would also like to congratulate the league for filling those games, because that was really nice to not have as many forfeits as possible. I know that there was a couple this year. I believe Oakland had one forfeit to Portland. And I think there was another one along the line. I'm not sure what it was, but I know there was a bunch of confusion on what happened. So not bad. A couple forfeits this year, much less than last year and much fewer than the WFA. The WFA, I mean, I think it would be better just to remove some of those teams instead of having them go 0-8 and all eight be forfeits. But there's at least three teams going 0-8 with forfeits, and another team that folded midway through the season that the games weren't replaced, so there will be a couple more forfeits for some teams that probably need to heal up. So, anyways, back to the overtime. The overtime structure has always been sudden death in the IWSL, and this year was the first year they changed it. I had to coach one game in a sudden death format, and I really don't like it because both teams should have the opportunity to win. And in the one overtime game I did coach, we played Santa Rosa, tied up. They got the ball first. We ended up stopping them, and we ran like three plays and scored and won in overtime. So both teams actually had the chance to score, but then it became down to field position, and we had awesome field position because of the offense-defense choices, and had a short field and scored rather easily. Now, the one thing I like about the overtime procedure now is that field position is given to the teams. Offense, defense, and special teams all play their parts. It first starts with offense or defense, you know, who can stop who can score on who, and then if you can't do that, hey, who has the strong special teams unit? So the first overtime was fun. For those of you who don't know, when you play college-style overtime rules, if you win the toss, you're supposed to choose defense. Well, Coach Manny over there, he wasn't sure about all the overtime things, so he kept on choosing offense, which made me wonderful because their whole team was playing both sides of the ball because I think there was a major drop-off from their starters to their backups. So I kept on making them jog to the other end of the field to get them a little bit more tired, and they started on offense. And they actually moved the ball more effectively than we did in overtime. They got within field goal range every time. They once got to the 5 and still couldn't punch it in. They tried to kick field goals in every single overtime. They missed one and had two blocked by our superstar, number 47, Ninji Martin. And then we just could not move the ball. We moved the ball once, got it within field goal range, and our kicker, Andrea Grant, we know her as Hub, she didn't get the ball cleanly, but she definitely had enough strength and hit a line drive that went right under the crossbar. So that was kind of rough. But then we got to the third overtime, And I changed the offensive philosophy. I was like, let's get in the shotgun. They're blitzing every single down. Let's see if we can get some quick passes off. Well, sure enough, if the first snap didn't go over the quarterback's head. She could have picked it up and thrown it away, but she tried running with it and got tackled for a loss, and next play was incomplete, and then we lost yardage on the following play, and it was 4th and 31 in the third overtime. So, I mean, what are you going to do? You're just going to throw one up and see what happens. Well, we had specific routes. It wasn't like our Hail Mary play. We just were trying to get, you know, something lucky happening, and SoCal only had one safety back, and the quarterback took the snap, had both running backs pick up blocks, stepped up into the pocket, and threw a 30-yard, you know, perfect spiral down the right sideline that dropped in between two defenders right into our receiver's hands, who spun. Both people fell off of her, and even if they would have tackled her, she probably would have gotten the first down. But she spun off of them, straddled the sideline, and scored, and that was a great way to end our season, and perfect for women's football, because that's the type of game that needs to be out there. I'm not saying everybody needs to go into overtime, but it was a closely fought, highly contested game that either team could have won at any moment, and it was exciting to be a part of it, and I love the new overtime rules, because that was a lot of fun. I mean, if we would have lost, would I have thought it was as much fun? Probably not, but it was a lot of fun, to say the least, and I look forward to playing them each and every year, since league should now know that we always put on a good show. Even if they're Tier 2 and not we're Tier 1, we match up very well together. Some of the other big things going on with the last week, you have the playoffs on the line this week in the IWFL. Playoffs are on the line, and there is, let me see, 7 major games on tap for this week. 7 major games that have playoff implications. Now, right now, as it stands, with the incorporation of the Massey ratings and the overall rating, we got in the West, we have the number one seed being Seattle, so meaning they would host. Number two would be LA. Number three would be KC. And then Chicago would be the wild card, so they would be traveling to Seattle, and Kansas City would be traveling to LA. Those are the way it shakes out right now for week one. The big game this week in the West is the Amazons versus the Sirens. Now, much to my dismay, we had to play the Amazons and Sirens twice. The Amazons had to play us twice, obviously, but only had to play the Sirens once, and I think that's completely unfair. I mean, I think that if you're in a division with somebody, especially when there's only 3 teams, you should be playing each team twice, and that's just how it should be. So to have it all riding on one game sucks for both teams, because if you lose it, you're done. The other team owns a tiebreaker, and there's no other way to go about it. Now, having played both teams, I'm going to go with the Amazons, knowing that they have a lot of speed, and they've only allowed one offensive touchdown all year. That's the best in the league. They've only allowed one offensive touchdown all year, and that was to us. There should have been another one, but we fumbled inside the 5, so that sucked. But they have a lot of team speed on defense. So this game comes down to speed versus size and strength. And the Amazons are pretty strong, and they do have a couple strong, larger ladies on their team, but Sacramento by far is the bigger team, especially when it comes to running backs with Jenny Kwan right there running up the middle, and that's going to be huge. I've noticed a couple of different things watching film in the Amazons lately. They are trying some new things. Not sure if this is the game they want to try new things. They probably want to stick to their bread and butter, use their speed. One thing I will say about Sacramento, they have a very disciplined defense. It's not as good as it has been in the past. And I don't know if they're suffering from being beat up or injuries, but they need to be in the right mindset for this game, because if they're out of position for one play, the Amazons are just that quick. They're gone. Number 80, Moffitt White is somebody to watch out for. She is fast. She plays both sides of the ball and doesn't ever seem to get tired. And they have just a plethora of running backs with, you know, they have 22 and they have 12. And then when 24 comes in there, she just is a burner. I mean, we were surprised. She only ran, I think, one play against us, and it was a 60-yard touchdown in like 2 seconds. So that's a huge game in the West. And right there, Sirens winning, they would need help most likely. But they, with a win, they could probably get in as a wild card. They would need Chicago to lose against Demolition. And the Demolition previously beat the Force 21-19, but that was in Detroit. Now they're in Chicago, and Chicago's fans do supply them with a heavy home field advantage, and I don't see them losing this game. Now, say they do, that leaves the door open for the Sirens, and the Sirens would have to win. They would know the score of that game probably around halftime of their game. So if they can keep it close, maybe they'll get that extra added incentive by hearing the Force lose. I had intended to attend. Yes, that's what I said. The Amazons game in Sacramento, but I will be unable to as I have friends visiting this weekend. So I will be watching the Twitter boards as well to see what those scores are. Let me see. The Tribe, they have an easy game against the Vixen, which is going to help them in the ratings, but I don't know if it's going to be enough to pass the Amazons or Seattle. Seattle, they're the number one seed right now, but, I mean, even with beating Tucson at Tucson, which is a long trip from Seattle, so I don't even know if they're going to bring their home team. But they need to win that game, and they probably need to win pretty handily to keep that number one seed. I don't see them doing it if LA wins. I see them taking over the number one seed, Seattle possibly dropping all the way to a number three because KC plays the Vixen, and even though they're 2-5, they're considered a tier one team, and the win will count more than Seattle's win. So there's a lot of shakeup, but the four teams are all but secure. All they have to do is win. The one question being, can the four suck it up and get back into the playoffs and defend their crown, their conference crown, even though it was the other conference, they're still a conference champion. So that's the big games on the Western front. On the Eastern front, things are a little bit along the same lines. You know, there's four teams basically in with a fifth team looking to wreck everybody's world. The first big game, I would say, is between the Militia and Intensity. Now you say, why is this a big game? It's Tier 1 versus Tier 2. Well, here's the thing. Boston beat the Sharks 21-7, and the Intensity just last week lost to the Sharks 44-0. But if the Intensity can play with Boston, that should give them a little bit of added boost going into the playoffs. I mean, they're 6-0 in Tier 2, so they have nothing to worry about there. They're going to be in the playoffs even with another loss, but because of the other big game in Tier 2, they might have something there, and it's just a test. Basically, that test that you want to see, how good are we? You know, I think losing 44-0 against the Sharks was disheartening, but I think here's their chance. Boston has to come to them, and let's see what we're made of. Prove that we can hang with these tier one teams. So I think that's an exciting game, and it's going to hurt Boston in the rankings, but I think they're already screwed. They're going to be the number three seed no matter what. Win, lose, or draw, they're going to be the number three seed in the Eastern Conference. The other game that I'm looking at is the Passion versus the Sharks. That is, to me, the game of the week. That right there is the game of the week in the week full of big games because the Passion are the wild card, and they have a lock on the wild card. It's pretty intense how much they have a lock on the wild card. I mean, they're almost ranked higher than some of the division leaders. But they play the Sharks, and they haven't played the Sharks this year. Looking at some other quality games that match up, it seems like the Passion would have the advantage. Well, the Sharks have the motivation. Despite losing three Tier 1 games, they're at 4-3, they're ranked pretty high on the boards as well. I don't see them jumping over Pittsburgh, even if Pittsburgh falls to 6-2, and with Sharks at 5-3. But that will open the door for the Atlanta Explosion, who play the Mayhem, who they should easily beat. I mean, the Mayhem are 2-5 in Tier 2 right now, and though they are a playoff-tier team right now, I'll get to that later. So the Sharks can not only give themselves a chance, but basically open the door for the Explosion by beating the Passion. Passion do have to travel to New York, so that's going to be something that will play some bit of a factor. I look for the Passion to win, but that's going to be a big, big game. It's not a home game for the Passion, so it's not going to be on FSN. But for those of you who are familiar with the Sharks, they usually broadcast all their games, so the ladies on WFB Talk will most likely have that link up on Saturday. big gain to listen to. Now, in Tier 2, there are two high-quality games with playoff implications. The Erie Illusion have to travel to the Jersey Justice. Now, right now, the Jersey Justice are the number 8 team in the playoff race for Tier 2. They are the number 8 team, and this is a big game for them. They did win the first one 8-6 over the Illusion. And while the Illusion are only 2-4, they have two games left because they do play next week. There's two games actually next week. But those have little to no effect on the season. I mean, if the Illusion win, then they basically have to win against the Hurricanes, which they should do, to hopefully sneak in, but I don't see them jumping several teams to get in there, especially since they've only won two games. They've been winning two to finish out. But Jersey has to win if they want to make the playoffs. It's just a big game for them, and since they're at home, I don't see them having trouble, but you never know. I mean, it's football, and as I say, on any given Sunday, and in this case, Saturday. The game of the week for Tier 2 has to be the Phoenix and the Queens. Battle of the Carolinas. Phoenix took the first one 8-0, and then they had a game last week, which they won handily, and the Queens had a bye. So this is their last game, and they're at home. I'm not sure how much space separates the two teams, but with 2 weeks to work on everything that happened in the game, maybe they got their offense together, learned a little bit more. What I found out in women's football, when you have a bye, it's rough because on the bye week, only the really dedicated show up. Now, both teams are in the playoffs, and they'll most likely play each other in the first round, which sucks. So, I mean, the Phoenix could sandbag, knowing that they're already in, even though I would not, because they're the number one seed right now. Losing could drop them behind Wisconsin, whose season is done. There is another team done, just because it doesn't make sense. They're 2-0 in Tier 2 and 2-4 in Tier 1. So Wisconsin is done with their season. And so there's two teams done, us and Wisconsin. They're waiting on that. And Wisconsin is the number 2 seed right now, and that right there I do not agree with at all. I mean, you have the Carolina Phoenix 7-0. You have the Montreal Blitz 4-0 in Tier 2 games. The Carolina Queens 6-1. New England Tennessee 6-0. Chattanooga Low Motion 5-1. Jersey Justice 4-1. Tennessee Valley Tigers 5-2. Yes, Wisconsin played 6 Tier 1 games, but the Vixen do not count as a Tier 1 team to me. They do in the rankings and all the ratings or whatever, but they are not a Tier 1 team in the quality of play. I don't care what their roster size and budget is. They don't play at the level of a Tier 1 team, and the same could be said about the Quake, because, I mean, we got killed 2 games. Unfortunately, I think that we are a Tier 1 team, and everybody's entitled to their opinion, and next year, when we have a year under our belt of experience, we shall be able to prove it. And maybe the same goes for the Vixen. So I'm not talking crap about you. I'm just saying, looking at those scores, you're not a Tier 1 team. Let's see. So, I mean, there's a bunch of big games this weekend. And like I said, there's a bunch of them. Most of the teams with playoff desires should win. The Blitz should win. Diamond should win. Divas should win. Fury should win. Let me see. The Locomotion end up playing the Nightmare, and that should be an easy win for them. And let's see. KC already talked about. And Atlanta should have an easy win. They're just hoping for some help from the Sharks. So that's the big thing over there. So in the Eastern Conference, we got the number one seed being DC. And with DC playing the Firebirds, another Tier 1 team, even with a win, they maintain their ranking. Dallas has to play Houston again, and with another big win there, they should maintain their number 2 rating. Boston, playing a Tier 2 team, even with a victory, will probably drop some, and they'll end up being number 3, and then it's all up to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh takes care of their business. They're in as the wild card, and they'll have to play DC in a rematch. And then we will see Dallas and Boston, which will be a very interesting game with Boston, cold weather state, traveling down to Dallas where it is hot in June. Southern California is usually pretty hot right now, but it's not hot. So I'm hoping maybe Dallas is still cooled off too. I know Austin's going to be exciting for whatever team makes it there because it's going to be totally different weather than they're used to, unless it's Dallas, in which they'll have a major home field advantage, and I feel sorry for anybody that has to play them. So that's all I have for the IWSL right now. I'm just a shame on you to all those people not keeping stats updated. Congratulations to all the teams this year for surviving the year. There are three teams that didn't, but they did the right thing by not risking further injuries, by pulling out and getting their games filled by the league. I will say that it's been a fun year for me. Watching all the teams, there's been a couple surprises to me. The Kansas City Tribe, watching them on film last year, I was very impressed. But to see them do what they did recently against Chicago was quite a jolt. And I'm glad to see that each year there's different teams trying to take the reins. So that's pretty cool. Once again, this is Third and Long with Coach Ben. It's a pre-record, so I'm not on right now. BJ's actually out of town. Unavailable, I should say. And so I had to pre-record this today, so you can't call in or anything like that. Just kind of giving my rundown on the leagues, my season, and the playoff structures getting ready to happen. So on the Tier 2 front, I know I haven't discussed that yet. I mean, I did a little bit, but right now you got Carolina, the Phoenix, I should say, Wisconsin, Montreal, the other Carolina, the Queens, which they probably don't like to be referred to as the other Carolina, but unless they beat the Phoenix this weekend, they'll be the other Carolina. You got the Intensity, Chattanooga Locomotion, Orlando Mayhem, and Jersey Justice. Now, I know the owners and coach and delegate of the Orlando Mayhem. I met him at the championship game last year. No disrespect meant, you do not belong in the playoffs. Two wins does not make you a playoff team, and that's where I think the Massey ratings is a joke. The East Coast gets all the crap, and I'm an East Coast boy, so I am not one to not know about East Coast bias. And out here on the West Coast bias. But, I mean, Seattle and L.A. and Sacramento are very good teams, and they are not getting any respect in the Massey ratings whatsoever. And if it's because of who they're playing, yeah, that's crap too, because I can guarantee you there's a bunch of teams out here that could compete with a lot of the East Coast so-called powerhouses. But 2-6, which is what the Orlando Mayhem will finish, is going to get them in the playoffs. I'm hoping that the Massey ratings wake up and realize that they should not be ranked as high as they did. They are. I mean, they are ranked higher than Portland, higher than the Quake. Let me see. Are they higher than Sacramento? No, they're not higher than Sacramento, but they're almost ranked as well as high as Sacramento, which is a joke to me. There should be two different ratings. There should be a Tier 2 rating and a Tier 1 rating. And I'm sure the league will play with the rating system next year, but the Tennessee Valley Tigers, I think, are getting screwed. They're 0-1 in Tier 1 games, and they're 5-2 in Tier 2 games. Yet Palm Beach, Manchester, and Orlando, who have not won anywhere near as many games as them, is ranked ahead of them. So I think they have a major gripe this year for not making it. Also, the Tucson Monsoon. All they've done is beat who they've played. They lost one Tier 1 game to L.A. Okay, that makes sense. And then they lost to the Breakers after a long travel, and they're missing a couple people. Understood. And then they're going to play Seattle this weekend. But they deserve a chance to at least have an opportunity to play. I mean, Corvallis is ranked higher than both SoCal and Tucson, which is just, no. You should be rewarded for wins, not rewarded for playing higher quality opponents. If you win, you win. It proves how good a team you are. You're not in charge of your schedule. That's the league. And there are certain teams being punished because of who they're playing. If you win, then you're doing what you're supposed to do. Sorry, if you're the 2-6 and 2-5 teams don't deserve a chance in the playoffs. So you got Orlando losing this weekend, possibly could let either Manchester. Let me see who the Freedom play. Freedom play the Rebels, which they'll win, so they could move up some. Then you got the Palm Beach Punishers. They are playing the Miami Fury. They're gonna lose. And then the Tennessee Valley Tigers, I don't think they're playing this week. Are they done? Yeah, they're done with their season. There's a third team. They're 5-3. So they have no chance to help their rating whatsoever. But if they were to jump the two teams ahead of them, they might be able to get that number 8 seed. But it looks like they're going to be sitting at home watching as either the Orlando Mayhem or Manchester Freedom play in the playoffs, which is kind of unfair. But, hey, that's life. And you roll with the punches and do what you can do. So that's my IWFL full recap with Tier 1 and Tier 2. And the WFA, on the other hand, they have 3 weeks left. The 27th was originally, I think, only one game, and now there's like 10 games being played on the 27th. So they've had a lot of schedule changes, and it's a first-year league, so, you know, give them some slack. They're trying to get everything worked out. The one thing I won't give them any slack for is the fact that Connecticut, East Texas, and the Murano She Devils all folded before the season started, and they've never been removed. Their schedules were never altered. The people are just getting wins. I mean, you have Philadelphia playing two games to finish off the season, and one of them is a forfeit, which they'll get credit for. You know, so they have really one game left, and it's against Binghamton, who they should beat handily. So Philadelphia Liberty Bills, they're in the playoffs. They got a forfeit and then a lower team to play. Boom, they're in. Western Michigan and Indiana Speed, they're part of the Region 2 Central Division. Now, that's a pretty big game. Let's see, Western Michigan plays the Dayton Diamonds. Dayton Diamonds haven't won a game. They should win. And then they have a week off before they play the Indiana Speed. Big time game right there. The Indiana Speed have a couple games ahead, or is just one? No, they should have two games. Indiana Speed, they play Toledo, which they'll win. And I don't have another game on here, so I think maybe they only have a seven-game schedule. Yeah, maybe. But the last time Western Michigan and Indiana played, it was 20-15, but it was at Indiana. Now they have to travel to West Michigan, and Michigan should be able to pull that ahead and then secure their playoff berth. In the Region 2 Mid-Atlantic, we've got Columbus and Kentucky fighting for that playoff spot. And Columbus has just been killing people. And guess what? They play Kentucky twice at the end of the season. Now, there's a big difference. Kentucky seems to be a very close. I mean, the scores are the points for 86, points against 70. So they've played a bunch of close games. Whereas Columbus, on the other hand, is just killing everybody. Killing everybody. They scored 173 points, they only allowed 19. So they play this week. Then they both have lesser games, with Columbus going to Cincinnati and Pittsburgh coming to Kentucky, which would be a good game because the first one, Kentucky only won 8-6 over the Pittsburgh Force. So, and then in the 27th, they have a rematch, which is going to be the games of the year right there. I mean, it all focuses on this week. If one of them's a blowout, then obviously they are not evenly matched. In the American Conference Southeast Division, you got the Dixie Blues and Gulf Coast Riptide, plus the Memphis Belles all mixed in there. There's three really good teams in this conference, or in this division, I should say. The Dixie Blues have just been beating everybody up. They've had a couple close games, and who would it be against? The Gulf Coast Riptide and Memphis Belles, but they've won both of them. So we have a couple rematches coming up towards the end of the season. The Jacksonville Dixie Blues plays the New Orleans Blaze, easy win, and then they got to play the Memphis Belles at Memphis. Now, that's a long trip, and they barely won last time. I mean, barely, 34-20. That's a close game for them. And then they finished off the season against the Gulf Coast Riptide at home. Now, they went to the Gulf Coast Riptide and won 49-36 in a highly scoring game. I'm sure that was pretty exciting. Lots of offense, little defense, probably some special teams sprinkled in. But the Dixie Blues, you know, they're the number one team, and they're going to have to prove it these last 2 weeks of the season. It's going to be fun for them. Luckily, they have an easy game against the Blaze first to kind of get them all healthy. Now, the Emelcross Barracudas did end up folding during the season, so their last couple games are going to be forfeits for the people on their schedule. In the Midwest Division of the American Conference, you got the St. Louis Slam and Iowa Thunder fighting it out. And these are two high-scoring teams. St. Louis scoring 270 this year. So that's just out of this world. I mean, they're by far the highest-scoring team in the league. I mean, next would be the West Michigan Mayhem. That just messed me up. It should be Western Michigan, but okay, West Michigan Mayhem. So the Slam have a couple big games with the Missouri Phoenix being not one of them, but that's the game they play this week. And then they have to, where is it, the Slam? I thought I had them marked. They have a bye, don't they? Yes, and then they go to the Iowa Thunder. This is a rematch with the Slam 1. 35-7 previously. So it looks like the Slam have that all wrapped up, and Iowa's going to be sitting home when the playoff season comes. You never know. That's why they play them, because they have to travel to Iowa. Let's see. Then you have the Southwest Division. Now, Southwest Division has had the East Texas Sabercats, who haven't played a game, so they've just been playing round-robin the whole year, and with Austin, Lone Star, and Houston, with Austin coming out on top most of the time, but this is a very, very highly contested division, which we just never know what's going to happen. There's no game this week because the Lone Star will get their victory against East Texas, making them 5-2. Then the following week, you have Austin getting their victory, while Lone Star and Cyclones battle it out, making them 6-1. And then to finish off the season, you have Houston and Austin against each other. So if Houston can upset Austin, it might open the door for Lone Star to sneak in there. Not sure of the whole tie-breaking system, but in any case, it'll be fun to see what's going on there. That's a very interesting part of their league. And in Region 6, which is the Pacific Southwest Division, we have the Showgirls and Lynx. The Prowlers are out, but their only two victories being against the forfeit wins against the Marana She Devils. Now, it's funny because the Lynx have played three games, and they're 4-1, and the Showgirls have played three games, but they're 5-0 because like all those victories with forfeits. So I don't know if playing less games is going to help them towards the end of the season because, let me see, the Lynx actually will grab one more victory via forfeit. This week is the second of three meetings between the Lynx and Showgirls, and the Lynx have to travel to Las Vegas again because they changed their home date till the end of the year. So both teams have since beaten up the Prowlers and gained experience. I know the Prowlers are a very short-staffed team this year in way of players. I know one game they only had 14 or something like that, when Vegas beat on them pretty bad. So this will be, you know, how much, I mean, the Lynx is a new team, so they'll be trying to show how far they've come in these past weeks, while the Showgirls will look to say, hey, you know, we're the veteran team, we're going to handle our business and take it to the playoffs and show what we're made of. So, and then whatever happens in that game will carry over into the 27th when they have to come to town, my town, you know, back down here in Southern California, Vegas and the Lynx play again. Now, the Lynx could be playing spoiler if they lose this game, or it could be a rubber match, which will be highly, highly enjoyable. Unfortunately, I'm not sure how many people will be at that game. Two games will be competing for each other, the IWFL playoff game in L.A., and then you have the Lynx game and the Showgirls. So, I mean, for the women's football aspect of it, it kind of sucks that both things are going to be scheduled on the same weekend, but you're going to be able to choose between two great games and whatever entices you more. I see it being L.A. versus Chicago, and then, you know, as a playoff game, and then the Showgirls versus the Lynx as a possible play-in game for the playoffs. We'll know this weekend when they play. I'll be paying attention to those scores. Last time Showgirls and Lynx play, the Lynx could not get on the board offensively. They ended up scoring on a fumble recovery towards the end of the game. But like I said, a couple games have been played, and we'll see. They both put up similar scores against the Prowlers. It'll be interesting, to say the least. I wish both teams good luck, and I'm sure they'll represent the West Coast very nicely, whichever one makes the playoffs. So that's all I have about the WFA. It's not really too much going on in women's football. I mean, everybody's winding down their seasons and enjoying the fact that it's either over or now they get to go down and fight for that chance to be the champion of their respective league. I know that we're enjoying our off season. As soon as our game was over, we're like, big sigh of relief, because it was just very draining, lots of film, but we grew very much as a team, and I'm hoping that everybody does get their joy out of it, because football is a wonderful game to play, and we will be enjoying an off season. I know that our management's already working on the 2010 season. I will be in Austin for the championship game in the IWFL. I know I will be at the two playoff games out here on the West Coast if LA hosts both of them. The 27th, I plan to be a sideline reporter, and if there happens to be another game on the 11th, I will be helping announce that game as well. And I'm hoping to be in Austin for not only the Tier 1 and Tier 2 championship games, but also the All-Star game, which is on Sunday. So that'll be fun to be able to see all the All-Stars actually play this year and see what a unique experience that is. I know I had a great time at the championship game last year. I think it helped that it was the home team actually made it to it. This year there is no home team because it's in Austin, but it's been announced so far ahead of time that people should have their plane tickets. And even in this economy, I'm hoping that there are a lot of people show up, and it's a good time. I just hope the weather accommodates it. Luckily, they're not playing one of the games during the day like they did in Chicago last year. Both games will be night. We're doing Friday night, Saturday night, and then a Sunday All-Star game. So that'll be exciting. I'm looking forward to watching the playoffs and checking the scores. I've watched so much film this year on teams. I plan to have everybody's name and all the main players worked out for whatever teams make it to the playoffs and championship games so that I can get all of them announced right. I enjoy women's football so much that I joined a flag league that I've been playing in the last couple of years, and I had a bunch of players come over, so we're going to have one of the few teams with ladies on our team. It's called Top Gun Flag Football, and we're going to do our part to show them that women can play football too and hopefully get our name out there, get us recognized a little bit more and help fill up stands, get some more fans and sponsors, because that's always, you know, nice. Spread your team name as much as you can. The coaches that I have are all playing, and then we got several fans playing, and then we also got some players. We're just out there to have fun and, you know, to kind of stay in shape during the off season. So I look forward to enjoying my next couple months off, not thinking about plays, watching film to coach, but watching film to enjoy and be passionate about football. That a short show tonight. It's only a little over 40 minutes, but I just wanted to break down my thoughts on all the playoff structures and what's expected these next couple weeks. So thank you, everybody, for listening. This is Third and Long with Coach Penn. I'm Coach Penn. You're the listener, and I'm out of here. Have a wonderful evening. Bye.